Today's program is brought to you by Domain. Domain offers discreet and secure storage, transportation, trading, and advisory services to passionate fine wine collectors worldwide. For more information, visit domainstorage.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I do want to remind you that I'm also the proprietor of a small wine label called Annona Wines. We make organic wines in Italy, in Abruzzo and Campania, and you can find Annona Wines at great retailers like New York Vintners and Vintry, and great restaurants like The Nomad, Charlie Bird, Pasquale Jones, Restaurant Danielle, Mark Forgioni, and lots more. Look for Annona Wines at annonawines.com. I'm excited about our guest today. We have one of the great brewmasters of America. He actually maybe prefers the term CFO or Chief Fermentation Officer. We have Roy Milner, who runs the show at the Blackberry Farm Brewery. Roy, welcome to In the Drink. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about the Blackberry Farm Brewery. I mean, for I think maybe some people will be familiar with Blackberry Farm, an outstanding, beautiful, large farm, restaurant, lodge, hotel, James Beard award-winning place. Maybe a lot of people don't know that there's a brewery as well.
Yeah, up until a few years ago, most people knew our farm from a culinary perspective or maybe for our wine program. And that's a great thing. Our farm's been around since 1976. And there are many facets to the farm, but culinary and wine is where we fly our flag the highest. I had the privilege of meeting Sam Bell in 2010, and we just discussed our passion for beverages and producing beverages. And the reality is, no matter how much you love great wine, you're not going to make a world-class wine in the state of Tennessee. But that didn't mean that we couldn't produce something else. And I had a background in beer, and Sam and I talked about our love for the state of Tennessee and doing something in our home state. And we kind of cooked up an idea to do this brewery and do it in a very small way. And we wanted to be respectful and patient with our guests to see if they were into what we were doing. And fortunately for us, a lot of visiting chefs and our guests wanted more beer. So we grew the program. And now we have a thriving, still very small brewery, but we're selling beer in 36 states now. So it's grown a lot from just being on the farm to sharing beer with our friends around the country.
Yeah, well, any great wine program always requires a lot of beer to keep that running.
So I love that saying.
That makes a lot of sense. So Sam, you know, he took the family farm from a small thing to a world class operation, and recently passed away. I'm sorry for the loss of your friend and partner. How have things been going since that happened?
Well, Sam was very transparent and good about sharing his vision with all of us, and we have a lot of leaders on our farm that have been there for many, many years, and the Bell family's always been very in tune. Mary Celeste was always a part of events and hospitality, so it's been a tough year, but it's also been rewarding to see how people rally around the vision and everyone look at their departments or areas of expertise and say, how can we be better? How do we honor a visionary like Sam that really comes around once in a lifetime? How do we carry out that vision and be the leaders that we want to be within our company? So it's if anything, I think people have just tightened down and try to be better at their respective pursuits.
Yeah, I know anyone who I know who has come in touch or contact with Sam at any point in their career has only had the most wonderful things to say about him.
Incredible man.
So many lives, and really a visionary to do that in the backwoods in Tennessee is pretty impressive.
Right.
How does having the brewery on a working farm and the restaurant and the hotel, how does that help you out, and what are some of the challenges with it?
Well, we benefit from having so many artisans that do different things, from preservationists to cheesemakers, butchers, foraging, gardeners, culinary chefs, somms. So the narrative at the farm every day, we talk about ingredient, we talk about place, we talk about flavor. And as a brewery, you couldn't be coming at it from a more interesting perspective, because we get to use all these different ingredients, especially the small batch stuff that we do at the farm. We've tried to carry a lot of that over into our production beers that see distribution. That becomes a little more challenging to get enough material. But from an intrigue standpoint, we've got so many projects going with our gardeners growing things for us, our cheesemakers washing cheeses in our beers, our butcher uses some of our beer in the charcuterie program, and then our chefs are constantly working our products into tasting menus and seasonal menus. So it's really kind of a Narnia situation, where everything we talk about is the same things that other artisans on the farm are talking about. And it's just a really nice flow of information and interest in each other.
It seems like a lot of that's coming from you to them. What are you getting the other way? Are you able to use any infusions of herbs and fruits or maybe that are grown on the beer grown on the farm?
Yeah, I would say that the most exciting thing we've been able to bring to life in the last year or so is all these native yeasts that we harvested from our farm. We collected 13 native yeast strains about 3 years ago. And we worked with a professor at Clemson University to isolate these yeasts and to, for lack of a better term, polish them so they're more appropriate for brewing. So it's not spontaneous fermentation. It's collecting specific yeast strains from different mediums, fruits, places on the farm, beehives, honeysuckle, wild plants. And they all do lend their own unique character to the end product. And we use those in production now. So we've isolated those yeast strains. We have a series of beer called the Native Series, and all of those beers, we try to incorporate ingredients from our area, whether it's malt being made in Asheville, North Carolina, or sorghum from Monterey, Tennessee, or fruit from local farmers that we've supported at the farm for many years. And we'll ferment those beers with native yeast strains. So, I mean, that's a really cool thing that the farm's given back to us that is unique to our program.
I mean, and that's incredible. And that's sort of what I love most about some of the wines that I really like, that they have a sense of place where it can't be replicated. You can't taste that anywhere else. You can buy a beer kit and make the same beer in California or New York and it'll taste the same. But if you are using these yeasts from your farm, it gives it such an identity, such a unique flavor that can't be replicated anywhere. I think that's incredible.
And we've had a really great time with using those yeasts and figuring out how they perform and what kind of flavors and aromatics and things that they do. And they're all different. So you kind of have to be ready for what you're embarking on.
Now, how did you decide on having a Belgian style as the focus behind the range of beers?
I've been around craft beer since the early 90s. I started out homebrewing. I had the opportunity to brew at some small brew pubs. And throughout my history with craft beer, Belgium's just always been this interesting place where there weren't a lot of rules. If you think of German brewing, you think of a more rigid style of brewing.
I have a German friend who always likes to quote the German beer purification law.
The Reinheitsgebot.
Yeah, which is from the 15th century or something like that.
It's celebrating its 500-year anniversary this year.
Yeah, which says that beer can only be made with water, hops, yeast,
malt.
And malt.
They didn't even know yeast existed at the time. It's since been added. But they make an amazing beer, and I love German beer, but it's not the way that I wanted to make beer. I wanted to make beer that spoke more to creativity, the artisan nature of agriculture. And the Belgians tend to throw the book out the window and say, we're going to use what we have, and we're going to be resourceful, and we may chuck some herbs in there and some fruits and put this beer on wood. And it's not to say that one's better than the other, but it's what I fell in love with. And when I met Sam and started talking to other artisans at the farm, it seemed to be more in line with what we speak every day. And I had the opportunity to go over to Belgium, and that just sealed the deal for me. It felt so right for what we were doing. And the Belgians also put beer on the table. If you look at the ritual of service in Belgium, every beer has its own glass. The presentation's on a silver platter. Even in some of the most casual places, the beer is poured with a reverence and an appreciation that we can slow down and enjoy this simple pleasure through a service ritual. And I loved that. So it really spoke more to culinary, which, again, everything about Belgian brewing ties back to what we talk about at the farm.
Mm-hmm. What are there new breweries in Belgium, or is it the classic, the Trappist and non-Trappist breweries?
There are new breweries in Belgium. I would say it's one of the harder places to embark on a new brewery. You're finding really, really cool operations popping up all over Scandinavia, all over France, all over Italy. Belgium, for whatever reason, has just been harder for people to break into, because I do think that you have those revered brands that have been around for many, many years and become the benchmark of the style, whether it's Saison DuPont or the Trappist Monasteries or some of the Flanders Red styles and Roselaar, Rodenbach. So I think maybe it's a harder market. It's also a very small population.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A lot of beer, a lot of chocolate, and a small population.
Correct.
On that note, we're going to take just a quick break. We'll be back with more with Roy Milner from Blackberry Farm Brewery right after this.
Domain offers discreet and secure storage, transportation, trading, and advisory services to passionate fine wine collectors worldwide. Since 2003, they've focused on making collecting easier and more enjoyable. With over 1.8 million bottles in storage across 5 facilities, Domain is the largest network of wine storage warehouses in the country. Warehouses are located in Chicago, St. Louis, Metro New York, Napa, and Washington, D.C., with refrigerated shipment hubs in dozens of cities. Their service also extends to the home collector. In the last decade, the team has organized and inventoried more than 1.7 million bottles in home sellers across the globe. Additionally, Domain offers auction services to clients with small and large parcels alike, negotiates on their behalf for the best possible price, and manages the entire liquidation process. Go to domainstorage.com to complete an online questionnaire, and someone will get back to you within one business day.
All right, we're back on In the Drink with Roy Milner, the Chief Fermentation Officer of Blackberry Farm Brewery. We were talking a little bit about the many different styles of beer and some of the new beers that are starting out in Scandinavia. I feel like, Roy, there are so many new beers that keep coming out. And I love your beer. I drink it. I have it at home with my girlfriend. But I feel like I can never keep up with all the beers that are around. Do you think that the beer market is overly saturated at this point, that there's too many? Or do you think that there's still room for the many brands to grow?
That's a great question. I love seeing the creativity and innovation. I don't think we are at a point where people are desensitized to what's coming out. I do think there's a premium on messaging and the why. Like, why is this beer this way and why are you doing it? But there's some wonderful breweries opening up. If you look 4 or 5 years ago, there were not even 2,000 breweries in the country. Now there are close to 5,000 with 2,000 more in planning. But what that would tell you is that your story better be strong. Local's not good enough anymore. Quality ingredients is not alone good enough anymore. It better be about pushing the boundaries of a style, or maybe hearkening back to the old world and going more simplified and really focusing on one particular thing. I enjoy it. I've gotten to see the industry go through many, many changes. And for me, I think distributors and retailers and consumers and producers are more engaged than ever before in talking to one another. So, but common sense would tell you that there's not enough real estate, whether it's tap mm-hmm. handles or in the grocery space, for every brand. So a lot of breweries are trying to sell direct. We can't ship our product to customers and guests, but you can come to us. So if you look at the Jester King or Hill Farmstead model, two amazing producers, you know, now people are creating destinations where you have to come to the source. And I think that's fun to see in America.
Can people stop by Blackberry Farm and have a beer?
Not at the moment. We certainly have some desire to create a space where people can come by and try our beer. That's people call all the time and ask where they can get our beer, and we try to send them to one of our friends or partners around the country. But I'd love to have a space where people can come experience it near our farm.
Now, I know you're focused on like large format, or I guess 750 milliliter wine size bottles, which is great. I'd love to have a meal, have cheese with that at home. I've always found that was difficult in the restaurant setting to convince people to get a 750. I mean, not impossible. We've certainly done it before. How have you been focusing more on retail? How do you look at that equation?
So much of it comes down to the particular establishment and how much they're willing to tell the story. I do think that even a great beer, a great story, whether it's one of our beers or anything else that's out there, beer does not have the same elasticity in pricing that wine does. A wine can go from $10 a bottle to thousands, and people are comfortable with that space. I do think that beer has a ceiling or a threshold, and we've experienced that as well. But we've got great partners around the country. People have done feature nights or by the glass pours, and that tends to work. But we just came out with a 375 ml for that very reason, just to give people a single serve opportunity to try the product. And we're always looking at different formats. We sold more draft beer this year than ever before. And that tends to be a space where people try a beer. There's no barrier. Mm-hmm. You can spend $6 or $7, try a beer. If you like it, maybe go back and get it in the grocery store.
Or $8 in New York.
Maybe that's dreaming in New York. So, yeah, it's a challenge. But
with the bottle, I mean, would you put the same beer in a keg as you would in a bottle? And if so, how would you approach that differently, right? Because the bottle, the 750, I imagine, are bottle fermented beers.
We do. We 100% bottle condition everything that goes into a bottle. We do not do that to our draft beer, because draft beer is meant to be consumed fresh and in the more immediate future. Our bottled beers, we've got beers that are 3-4 years old at in our vault and cellar right now that are phenomenal. Some of us prefer them to when it's released fresh. So they are two different products, and we try to educate that one's drink now, one's drink whenever you feel appropriate, but it's appropriate to hold.
Do you think, I feel like a few years ago there was a little bit of a vintage beer moment that maybe I'm not going to the right places, but I don't see it happening as much anymore. Is that still in the beer community something that people are talking about cellared, aged, vintage, dated beer?
Okay. Very much so. There are some wonderful places around the country that are creating cellars of verticals and different producers, their entire portfolio, and what ages well, what doesn't. The friends of aging tend to be beers that are not filtered. So you want live yeast in that bottle. Higher gravity beers tend to do better. And larger format beers tend to do better. There's a yeast dynamic that goes on with that 750 ml that, and beers with high hop concentrations. It's counterintuitive. Most hop forward beers, you're told drink fresh to get all those aromatics, but they do really neat things with some age on them. I think I might harken back to some of the lessons Sam taught me about Riesling. For a long time, it was don't age, it's not worth it. And now we drink Rieslings at the farm that are 20, 30 years old, and they're fascinating. It doesn't mean better or worse, they're just different. And really hot forward beers can do great things with some aging on them once the oxidation happens and you get the flavor compounds.
The hops are a preservative as well, right?
Correct.
Just like in Riesling, it has such high acidity that acid preserves it. Like if you're making a pie and an apple pie, you squeeze some lemon on the apples so they don't turn brown. It's the same thing with the acidity.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. Does it become less I really, really don't like hoppy beer. Like I don't like, I love beer and I love well-made craft beer, but there's been such a movement towards how much hops can we possibly squeeze into this beer? And it's to the point where like, I mean, sometimes I feel like all you smell is the hops, or the bitterness is too intense. When you have those very hoppy beers and you age them, does it become more integrated, or is that always?
It does. Everything mellows. The bitterness subsides. Mm. Most of the aromatics evolve. You don't get all that burst of fresh pine, of fruit. They tend to mellow out. And so, you should try some vintage hop forward beers. They're pretty interesting.
Okay. And what about these like beers that people like go to the brewery, wait in line for hours? Like, are any of those worth it? Like, what is there any like super like allocated rare beer that, you know, is really worth like seeking out if you can find it?
Well, I good on the breweries that have created this mystique and story around come try this. There's only a limited amount. That's not how I personally want to spend my time, and we benefit from trading beer with a lot of our friends around the country. So we have boxes going back and forth all the time of unique things, and we do bottle shares, and we trade with a lot of our guests that are into cellaring and building a collection. So we tend to get to try them. I think that's what's cool about bottle shares is you have this culture of people that are willing to say, instead of sitting on this and holding it and keeping it for myself, let's share it. The community of craft beer is all about sharing and connecting, and it's fun to see a group of people get together and bring two or three bottles each, and you've got all these things that you might only get an ounce or two of, but that's enough. That's an experience. You got to try the product, and you can judge for yourself if you want to go the next year and wait in line or camp out. But yeah, there's some really great beer out there, and it is very limited, and I think that's one way some of those breweries are differentiating. It's just not how I'm going to hang out.
Now, I know a lot of brewers have started as home brewers. Is that worth doing for someone who is doing it casually? I mean, should we not just better also spend your time, just go out and buy some great beer that's made by a professional? Do you recommend people who are just dabbling in it to homebrew?
I do. That's how I got into it. And I relate it to cooking. I have no desire to be a professional chef. I have no desire to take my knowledge to that level of understanding, but I love to cook. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a visceral connection to the ingredients, to yourself, to learning. If you have a curiosity, I think cooking is a great way to explore flavor and to build some confidence in your own skills. So homebrewing is the same thing. When you understand the process and you make something that you share with others and you see what it does to them, when it makes them happy, when they're interested and they ask questions, I think the evolution of understanding the beer category and understanding beer styles, the more people that are making them at home, the more foundational that knowledge really becomes. And it provides a platform for you to enjoy all the other products that are out there and understand them better. So yeah, I would encourage everybody to try it.
There's a great homebrew store near me in Brooklyn on Washington. I can't remember the name of it right now, but Washington Avenue in Brooklyn, that every time I go by, I'm like, I'm going to learn how. I'm going to stop by there, get the equipment, take the classes, do it.
Come homebrew with me. It's fun to do it with someone else.
Okay. Like,
I've gotten to cook with a lot of people that I admire, and in a casual setting. And nothing will inspire you more than seeing someone who can show you techniques and ways to do it that make it more fun. And so grab a friend, a buddy, even somebody from the homebrew shop. A lot of times they do demos, and go witness the process and understand it. And you'll see that it can be a lot of fun, and you're not everybody's trying to win a gold medal in an international competition.
Yeah. Just a good buddy bonding and have some fun. One last question before you recently did, and I think a super interesting collaboration with the brewmaster from Evil Twin and a partner from Torst, and you went to Benton's Ham and smoked the malt in their smokehouse. Can you talk a little bit about that? And if you have any, I mean, that beer was just awesome. And if you have any other collaborations coming up.
Yeah, that was the first collaboration we ever did. And when I had the opportunity to meet Yeppe, we talked about what hadn't been done. And we weren't aware of a lot of people that had smoked hops. And I had been to Bamberg, Germany the fall before, and I've always loved smoked beer, but spending time in Bamberg, you really do embrace the culture of smoked beer, whether it's smoked malts or the treatment in wood and how that plays. And in Bamberg, they tell the story of beechwood, and I started thinking about different regions of the United States. You know, in Alaska, it's alder. In Texas, it's mesquite. In Louisiana, it's pecan. Well, where we are, it's hickory. And when Yeppe and I started talking about this idea, I said, we've got to incorporate Allan Benton. You know, here's this luminary that's 20 minutes from us that not only do you need to meet, we need to incorporate smoke as an ingredient. And to tie it full circle, one of Sam's greatest passions was cooking outdoors and cooking over live fire and using smoke as an ingredient. So I felt like it kind of honored Sam. It gave us the opportunity to work with somebody who I admire greatly, an evil twin, and we both share a relationship with 12%. So it just kind of worked on how we would share the beer with people outside of our regions and tell the story of smoke as an ingredient and smoking old world hops. And the beer, you can judge for yourself. There's still some out there. We didn't make a lot of it, but we have projects planned for this year. We'll do more projects with Evil Twin. We have something planned with Stillwater and a handful of other breweries that are great friends of ours out there that I think our guests will be excited about, and hopefully it'll generate some excitement in the beer community.
It seems like this beer community is very open and sharing, and
it's a phenomenal place to spend a career.
Yeah, well, I will definitely be looking out for them. I absolutely love your beers. Blackberry Farm Brewery is fantastic, and like I said, that was a special a smoked beer, but just elegantly smoked. You didn't just taste the smoke; you tasted everything together. It's so good.
Thank you.
All right, and thanks so much for listening. I also want to thank our sponsors. Our engineer is David Tadashore, and Aaron Fairbanks runs the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks so much for listening. This has been In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.